and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. How you doing? Lurking conservatives, welcome aboard, self-important people. How are you? And also just you people who are just getting over the weekend, moving into work. It's Monday morning, and I'm already crawling out of my skin, Riley, but it's going to be all right.
Why are you crawling out your skin?
Because, my friend, I'm still a little sick. This cold has gone on for a week and 2 days. There's still something. I think there is a bunch of trolls living in my bronchial passages.
Uh-oh.
I don't know what is going on, but I'll get on these coughing jags. I'm not going to the doctor. You know why? Because I don't like to go to the doctor, Riley, and I don't want
to. Did you go to the sauna like I told you?
All they have is a dry sauna at my gym. They don't have a steam room. I think you need a steam room to loosen stuff up. That's what you got a steam room at your gym?
Got both.
Okay, see, I don't have both. I could have went into my bathroom and did the steam thing, but I did not. So here's what I'm just a little cranky about that because it's kept me out of the gym for 2 weeks. And not that I'm a compulsive gym goer, but it makes me feel a little. I got to do something.
Chris Lopresto, you know why he's doing this, don't you?
Why?
Because his mom was in town.
Oh, Lord.
No, apparently she said I looked good. There was a defense made. My wife, Mishna, made the defense that I don't like Mark when he's too thin. And my mother said yes, reluctantly said yes, I know what you're talking about. and my wife said yes, because he gets scrawny and his head looks funny. And my mother said, yeah, I know what you're saying. He gets too gaunt. And I'm like, great. What's up? What's up, Chris?
Did she mention anything else to you? Like anything negative? Like, I don't know, maybe your gray hair or something?
You mean like right when I walked in? Right when I hadn't seen her in a year and a half, she comes down to the show. She goes, "Hi! Oh, look at you're getting gray." I don't mind. I don't mind.
What else did she say? She said, "Mark, are you the oldest one here?"
Boy, that made me feel great.
She hadn't seen you yet.
Oh,
see, that's what I'm talking about. What is that?
Hey, it'll be all right, man.
I hope it's going to be all right.
Okay.
I'm done with it. I don't know what it is. I don't even smoke anymore. At least when you smoke, every time I used to get a cold like this when I smoked or get a bronchial thing going, I was so excited because I thought it was actually doing something. Like, it's erasing it.
Uh-oh.
It's erasing everything out of my chest. But when do I give up, right? Look at this. Look, I'm going through the New York Times. I'm going through the New York Times magazine, and I'm going to show you this. You can't see this, obviously, if you're just listening to the radio. But you see this, Riley? You see what that is? You see what that is? Let me explain
it to the
big D. Let me explain it to the people out there.
Please.
All right, this is called the Ball. It's a Dyson vacuum cleaner. All right, it's called the Ball. All right, now, I just bought a Dyson. What was it, less than a year ago? Right, I got the top of the line, excellent Dyson, right?
Yeah.
I love the thing because it helps me with all the cats. I got the three feral cats who are all doing fine, and I can touch them all now. It's all very exciting. But the Dyson is the excellent vacuum cleaner to vacuum up the cat hair because it never loses suction, and you can just pull the canister out. All right, I was very excited about it. But now, less than a year later, they got one that, look at that. It looks like it's got this big ball on it. How fun does that look? So you can turn corners with it. It moves around. I don't even know what it does. I can't even explain it. And I'm not pushing Dysons here. My point is this. All right.
Everything becomes obsolete.
Right. Planned obsolescence is screwing everybody. All right. Now, iPods, we've had iPod discussions. I'm now completely comfortable with the fact that I'm not going to have one. I'm not going to get any of them because I know in a year or two, you're going to have a Betamax in your pocket. All right. That's what you're going to have, Chris. I don't know what the next thing is, but I don't care. My phone, I'm not going to update the phone as long as I can call people with it. I'll need to take pictures, right? I don't need to fly. I don't need to, be able to play games, right? I'm one of these people. Even with the computer on some level, I do email and I do a little research, but I tend to like my time.
Well, I'll tell you what.
What?
Because I know that with all of this technology and all of this kind of foolishness, there's one story this morning, Mark Maron. One story that warmed the cockles of your heart the minute you heard about it.
What is that? Which one is that?
The Jackson Pollock story.
No, I know. Well, that to me is a lucky thing. In that, that to me, I'll get into that in 1 second.
Yeah.
But, maybe the ball vacuum would be better. But do you want to buy the other Dyson? Does anyone want to buy the other Dyson? because
much?
This
what
one.
How much?
Well, I'll trade you for the iPod. This one. let's trade obsolete technology.
There you
They're
go.
Both going to be out in a few days, anyways. But this thing's got a ball that swivels around. Look how cool that ad is. I'm in.
Wow. Here,
but this is the same thing with anorexic men. I'm tired of this stuff. The low carb crap. Forget about it. You know, now there's sections in the supermarket for low carb stuff. I'm starting to notice. Literally, you watch TV. I was watching Regis and Kathy for some reason for 2 minutes, and the producer guy Gelman.
Yeah.
He's an anorexic man. You see this all the time. You literally see men who are like in their 40s who are gaunt. Their head looks too big because they're addicted to low carbs. They're in a constant state of keratosis. Is that what it's called? Carotic. Ketosis.
Okay. Well, you know, my wife bought a loaf of this low-carb bread last week. Still sitting there unopened. A week later.
It's just a repackaging of the diet craze. It doesn't mean anything. And this ketosis situation is apparently not that healthy. I think this is where, I better do some research on it because I don't quite understand. It happens a lot in diabetics. It's where you start to utilize, I think you no longer, you burn all your, what am I going
to
make something
you
up?
Start to you start to metabolize your own body fat. Is
yeah,
that what
right.
To
it's
say?
Something
yeah.
like that. It's just, it's but apparently it's not that healthy. And the thing that scares me, not unlike, you know, the Dyson, the iPod and everything else, is that when do you just surrender, for God's sakes? Look, I'm wearing a pair of Levi's that I've had for years. I'm not ashamed of that. That used to mean that they had integrity. I don't buy them already broken in. When do you just sort of, you know, when do you just relax, for God's sake?
Broken in Levi's. Go ahead, Maren.
They do.
Keep going.
When
Nick,
do you relax?
Right.
When
you're
do you
right.
relax? When do I just let my belly go? When can I just do that?
When you're 80.
Oh, no.
Then
no,
you won't have one.
I so much want to relax. I don't want to be part of this competition anymore. I just want, is there something wrong with that? But then people laugh at you. You know, when you pull your phone up, they're like, what is that? Well, that's cute.
Who's laughing at you, my friend?
Huh?
Who's laughing at you?
Well, that's the guy in my head who's laughing. He's laughing right now that I'm even talking about this. And then some guy is a forger, like you were talking about. I had this dream, and this is something I get from my father, my poor father. Jackson Pollock, this guy, apparently his family, this guy Alex Matter, whose family knew Pollock out on the vineyard, They found in a warehouse, like these things were in a bundle, you know, next to a boiler or something, like some 32 previously unknown works by abstract art icon Jackson Pollock. That's what it says right here on the press. But you know what that means? That's like $100 million.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and don't you just ever want, it's that treasure finding thing, man. Don't you just want to come upon that? But I know it's not going to happen.
But you know what? At a point, man, I really believe that Jackson Pollock's art transcends how much you can get for any single. This
of
is
course.
An extraordinary find. 32.
Very exciting to see these early pieces. Some of them were not even finished. It's going to be. And this guy is doing the right thing. He wants to tour the country with them as an examination of these sort of this new look into the art and the mind of Jackson Pollock.
Absolutely.
But there's something interesting and exciting on a treasure finding. You know, everyone wants to have that moment.
I know.
Where you're like, oh my God, look at what I have.
Yeah.
And this guy's not even going to sell it. They're going to keep it in the family. But, you know, obviously very excited to see the work, but would love to, because I have a couple of pieces of art that I got from my great aunt in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're worth anything, though. You know, but there's still the dream that you're possessing.
To the store. You can check it out.
To the store that does that?
Well, I mean, you could get an appraiser to do that.
Yeah, right. We're thinking about getting, I don't want to say the name of the artist. But it rhymes with Paysanne.
Oh.
I'm kidding. No, could not be. How could it be Paysanne? Can you imagine if you just found a Paysanne? It's not even a matter of selling it. It's knowing that thing that you have. There's so few things in life that you have that so much integrity, that so much value, that will never lose their value. But everything, I guess, fades away into dust, and we just rot. Have a good Monday. We'll be back with some talk about the Senate and what they're up to. And actually, you know, it's going to be a great week. I have some other things I want to talk about later, but we got to get into the filibuster struggle. We have some good guests on today's show. Greg Proops is going to be here later in the hour. We've got Noah Feldman, one of the co-drafters of the first Iraqi constitution, who is very up on what is happening in terms of the Civil War and the movement towards Civil War, and when do you call it Civil War. He's the author of What We Owe Iraq, War and Ethics of Nation Building. Very bright guy. In just a few minutes, Tom Hodgkinson is going to be on the phone with us from England about his book, How to Be Idle, which, let me tell you something, is a lifestyle that I miss more than you can ever imagine.
Likewise.
15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
Atlantis Tiller Cultivator. Put the fun back in gardening. Call now 1-800-211-8001. That's 1-800-211-8001.
Oh, 20 past the hour, Air America Radio. It's Morning's Edition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
Apparently, ketosis is when your body burns your stored fat as opposed to glucose that you've dumped into your body.
Ah.
That it means if you're not operating on fuel, you're operating on stored fat, which means if you maintain that for a while, it'll get rid of that that stored fat. And you kind of operate at that level. And apparently, ketones are regulated. This is the little things that are facilitate this process, and they're regulated by insulin, but ketosis in diabetics is something different. This is all done just like a little off-the-cuff research I did. I'm sure that the emails will start flying in. It's like, Maren doesn't understand ketosis, what it really means. You know, the important stuff. That's what provokes people, stuff, Riley. So now it seems that there is definitely some serious criticism of Bill Frist in trying to do this nuclear option, trying to create a vote that would get rid of the filibuster, because as I know and as you know, as I've been taught, the filibuster is essential senatorial procedure in order to protect the minority and to protect the country from a complete, in this case, Christo-fascist zombie brigade takeover of the government.
Well, yeah, it really is to protect from the tyranny of the majority. And what's happening with Bill Frist now is he's being pulled in two directions at the same time. His socially conservative base, the base from which he hopes to mount a presidential bid in 2008, is saying, this is your litmus test, Dr. Frist. Mm-hmm. You have to get this done. You have to get rid of the filibuster and get these judges, who we'd like to see making American law, confirmed. That's what their end game is.
So the power mongers of the Christian right have sat down with Frist and said, look, we own the souls of this many votes, and they will do whatever we tell them to do because we have them programmed. So if you want those people to support you in 2008, my friend, it's time to sign the Faustian bargain with the Crystal Fascist Zombie Brigade.
But at the same time, corporate America says, whoa, hold up. Yeah, wait a minute, okay?
Don't pander to them.
Well, they don't really care if they pander to them. What they do care about is their business being interrupted.
Business legislation within the Senate.
That's right. House. And the Democrats in the Senate say, all right, you guys want to start this, we are going to tie up the Senate. That doesn't mean necessarily that no legislation will get through, but it certainly means that a lot of legislation that is near and dear to the hearts of corporate America will not get heard in the near term.
So this was, we reported this a while back, too. This was always the other line, the other option. If the Republicans do get rid of the filibuster, is that the Democrats can stall legislative business.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's a concern to, this is where, this weird line is that, one thing we don't want necessarily, and I don't want to use myself in the collective we, the one thing the Democrats may not necessarily want is to be so, visibly aligned with big business that big business is actually supporting, the Democrats because, look, you're on our tip, too. You guys are doing our business as well.
Yeah.
But that's the way it's going to pan out.
Well, it is the way it's going to pan out in terms of the commonality of interest. There are periods of time when people, you see this in sports every now and then, man, when guys on the same team end up duking it out with each other for no apparent reason.
Yes.
And this is what's going on between the social conservatives and the business community. They do have a commonality of interest on any number of different issues, but on this one, their interests collide. And because business may not control as many votes, at least in Bill Frist's mind, as these social conservatives do, that's why he showed up on Justice Sunday the way he did.
Right.
Because he had to speak to these folks. And the conventional wisdom is that he will go forward, perhaps even imperiling his own ambition, because if he can't raise any money from corporate America, he has trouble getting his message out against all the other Republicans who may want to replace George W. Bush. See, that's the other side of this.
Sure. There's no satisfying closure in this game ever, unless it's elections. Other than that, it's just this ongoing political struggle. I wish that what you were saying was also going on in the religious base of the Republican Party, where you're talking about social conservatives and you're talking about fiscal conservatives fighting.
Yeah.
I wish, and we saw a taste of it, you know, a week before last, or it was actually last week, when Billy Graham's son Franklin came out against that pastor who kicked the Democrats
out
of the church. So that is a schism within the evangelical community that I hope widens, because there certainly is a schism between evangelical Christian right fascists and people that consider themselves real Christians, people who want to see the work of Christ done, people who believe that, that Christian principles are progressive, liberal, and can help people, that, you know, I wish they were actually more vocal against the evangelical community. And I'll get into some of that later, because I had a conversation with some former divinity students who are out there doing the real work, and maybe I'll tell you about that experience.
Well, see, this is the interesting thing. What happens when you have schisms within that socially conservative base is that the gatekeepers, the Tony Perkinses, the Dobsons, they tend to paper over these disputes, and they do that in what I believe is a very crafty way, by, you know, refocusing on what they agree on.
Yeah.
See, they agree on certain things, and they prioritize what they agree on, and they agree to put what they don't agree on the back burner. This is one instance where the two sides are not really willing to do that, and yeah, Democrats should be able to try and take some advantage of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, the ongoing process with this, I believe in my heart that the filibuster needs to exist. You know, I hope that there is some respect paid to the process of checks and balances within the House. I hope that that Harry Reid makes his case that there is a noble path within the Senate, at least in procedural elements, and that what Bill Frist is planning on doing is breaking a historical precedent, and actually it's not for short-term political gain. It will change the tone of the Senate for years to come.
Well, it's interesting, too, because they have a number of Republican senators who haven't committed yet, who are a very interesting list, because they can. The list contains some people that you wouldn't normally think, like John Sununu, for example, from New Hampshire,
mm-hmm.
or Arlen Specter from Pennsylvania. You might figure. John Warner, who's a patrician, old guard traditionalist
mm-hmm.
in the Senate. Susan Collins from Maine. Mike DeWine. Chuck Hagel, who has his own presidential ambition.
So you just wake up, folks, and wish you could stay in bed for another hour or two, thinking about calling in sick to work. Our next guest says, go ahead and give in to your urge to be idle. We're going to have him on the phone, Tom Hodgkinson, the author of How to Be Idle, in just a few minutes. God, I wish I could do it. You want to just go?
Yeah, let's leave. Right. See ya, Air America Radio.
Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Media consolidation. We are polishing old Sparky. You see what I'm saying?
The Majority Report on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Good morning. It's Monday. If you're just waking up, and the last thing you want to do is wake up, the last thing you want to do is go to work, the last thing you want to do is anything other than just hang out and take it in, our next guest here is going to be he's going to be a savior to you, because he's going to tell you how to do it. Tom Hodgkinson's book, How to Be Idle, was released in England. It's now available here. Now, Tom, I got to tell you something. I spent years as a stand-up comic doing nothing, but I was paralyzed. I was paralyzed with anxiety and fear that I might not ever do anything, and that's not really being idle, is it?
No. I think, are you saying that the fear was the kind of motivation for you to go and do stuff?
It was a motivation, a hope. There was definitely an anxiety that I would not accomplish things in my life.
But didn't you find that you needed these times of so-called doing nothing, staring out the window and to come up with the sort of ideas for what you were going to do?
Absolutely. I loved it. I still love it. You know, it's one of the. I wish I had more of it now.
Neither one of us has any of it now, Tom. That's the problem. We sit and obsess about what we're going to do the next day.
Yeah, well, this is one of the points I'm trying to make, is I think we've lost the art of living in the moment. And if anything, being idle is a way of sort of reclaiming the now, you know, because a lot of our life is bound up in planning for the future, making money in order to be secure in the future, you know, getting the job that's going to lead to the next job. We're always looking at the next stage ahead. And what I'm saying is let's kind of give ourselves a break at least every now and then, and sort of tune in for the moment, walk on the grass, look at the stars, and smell the flowers.
Because that's part of the, this is part of the great thing of being a human. It's one of the great advantages of having a reflective consciousness is that, you know, we can sort of feel that it's almost meditative. But you also make room in your book. There, it's broken down into, I guess, like almost like 25 chapters or such.
Yeah.
Every hour of the day almost, you know, you've got sort of the joys of sleeping in. You talk about the hangover, the nap. You talk about smoking. You talk about fishing. You know, like, now, in your appreciation, I imagine it's like noon there, so you probably, you're just getting up. You haven't done much today.
Well, actually, I've got small children, so they come and wake us up at about 7 in the morning, so I'm having to adjust to that. I'm looking forward to a nap later after lunch.
Okay.
So you don't really, you can't really practice what you preach, because with small kids, I mean, there's no such thing as idle, is there?
Well, what I'm trying to do is to get them, you know, working for us. So, I think if you can, we're having some limited success with the 5-year-old. It's a bit harder with the 3-year-old and the 4-month and the 4-month-year-old. But I think you can be idle with kids. You know, you can. Again, I think the whole childcare issue is bound up with the idea that you have to be sort of active all the time. Kids are making play dates with each other, and, you know, you can almost imagine kids with their Palm Pilots, you know, planning their schedules. But perhaps, you know, sometimes we can throw the schedules out the window and take the day off, lie around in their bedroom, in our bedroom, not have them to get their clothes on and stuff like that.
Mm.
And I think you can, there are lots of sort of free pleasures that you can do with your kids, just going for walks, playing in the garden and stuff like that.
Sure. Tom, what's the difference between idle and bone idle?
Bone idle is even better. Well, what I'm trying to get at in the book is, I suppose, the difference between my vision or my idea of what being idle is and what idleness is, as opposed to sort of mere laziness or just being a couch potato. I'm not really saying let's just give up and slob out in front of the TV. What I'm saying is, in your idleness, being idle is a way of sort of grabbing hold of life and grabbing your time back for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, we give an awful lot of, or we sell a lot of our time to employers, and then we're busy with the home. And you know, where does the living come in? What I'm trying to say is, you know, can we sort of recapture moments through the day or hours, you know, even the odd sort of minutes here and there, just to be who we are?
I completely agree with you in the sense that, you know, there's so much noise, whether it's the noise of work or the noise of home or the noise in your head or your expectations or being jealous of other people or,
yeah,
you know, waiting. You know, what's the next, what recreational hobby item do I need? Do I need an iPod? Is there a new thing? There's just the way that capitalism in general, the way that consumerist culture is designed, pretends like it's enabling you to have recreation time if you keep up with things, but it's really denying you of all time whatsoever.
Well, that's right. You know, our life is split into two parts, work and leisure.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them are kind of unsatisfactory to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because our work is very active, but we're doing it in general for somebody else, you know, somebody else's profits. And again, that's the sort of capitalist thing. Our labor time is sort of exploited to make money for somebody else. And then when we're not working, you're expected to spend a lot of money on your leisure. And again, as an idler, spending money on leisure means that you're making somebody else work for you.
Yeah.
Now, is there some way we can combine work and leisure into a sort of whole life and not a split-up one? As you say, the capitalist thing is, you know, buy this new gadget. This is the final one that's going to make your life easier. And most consumer items are sold on that basis, you know, whether it's a washing machine or an iPod, less hassle. But does that really work? I mean, the more labor-saving devices, it seems, the harder we have to work.
Yes.
It's gone a bit wrong.
Yes, that's absolutely right. They're presented to us as either being, you know, to make our lives more convenient or more leisurely, but, you know, I can't even get through the manuals. I can't even get through the instructions. You know, and then by the time you do get through the instructions, someone goes, oh, you didn't get the new one? What do you mean there's a new one?
Yeah, as soon as you got the hang of, you know, the old technology, that there's new technology. I mean, you know, it was VHS, then it was DVD, you know.
Yeah.
And then the DVDs go wrong, the CDs go wrong, now it's MP3s, and it's all quite dizzying. I mean, as far as technology is concerned, I quite enjoy going backwards. You can get a Super 8 camera for a dollar in the at a car boot sale or something.
Yeah, listen to vinyl.
That's great fun.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy old 60s record players and get into vinyl that nobody wants anymore.
That's called time travel.
Yeah, really.
It's called time travel. And, you know, if you buy the 60s technology, you can live like a 60s millionaire. But you can live like Paul McCartney in 1966. He had the Super 8 camera and the latest gizmo record thing that nobody wants anymore.
So, true.
You can be sort of, but you could live very well if you just imagine it's 30 years ago.
Tom Hoskinson, how will the periods of idleness that you advocate affect your working life? Well, I mean, can it affect it positively?
Well, it can, yeah. I mean, I'm not totally into the idea of idleness as a sort of way of being, as a way of serving your employer better.
Not necessarily in that context. Maybe just approaching your work from a different frame of mind, for example.
Yeah, I mean, I think, let's take sleep. That's an important part of the idler's life. Now, I read a book called Sleep Thieves, which claims that, let's say, roughly 100 years ago, and certainly before the invention of the light bulb by Edison, we slept something like 9 hours a night on average. Apparently today the total is more like 7.5 hours. Now, we all know, I know as a parent with young children, what sleep deprivation does to your mind. I mean, you go insane, And then when you've had a good night's sleep, suddenly everything, all the problems that life necessarily throws at you seem a bit easier to cope with. So, one of the first steps is sleep more. I mean, on the London Underground, there are all these ads saying, are you tired, are you tired, take these drugs and pills and various potions and things. You never see an ad saying, how about sleeping more?
Mm. They're actually marketing potions in England?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen them. I was in London over the holidays. I saw some of those ads. Yeah, they're all over the place, too.
So, it's so weird. We were just talking about consumerism because I got preoccupied with the Dyson vacuum cleaner.
Dyson. Yeah.
And I bought one. I fell for it. And
yeah,
now
I
there's...
Too.
You did, too?
Yeah, and I've progressed it ever since.
Oh, why?
Well, it doesn't work. I mean, as a piece of marketing, it was genius because James Dyson invented this vacuum cleaner, which was 3 times the price of any existing model.
Yeah, you'd think it could fly.
Yeah. And this was supposed to somehow clean the house for you.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Because it sort of looked good, I thought, well, this is going to make the vacuuming fun. But the thing kept breaking, and I found that you had to mend it yourself. I was on the phone to the helpline.
Mine didn't break it. It still works good. But there's a new one out, and it's like less than a year later. Now I'm preoccupied with that, and my brain is constantly cluttered. I'll tell you, when I was just doing the creative work and just doing stand-up, as frustrating as any day could be, if you could sit idle for long enough and get your brain at peace enough, you actually start to feel that you're having your own thoughts again.
That's right. And, in Eastern cultures, it's called meditation.
Mm-hmm.
Meditation is basically just, doing nothing. And I think it's a good way to sort of get yourself centered and get your mind relaxed. Because, as you say, the busyness, the noise in your head, the bustle, creates this kind of constant anxiety. And I might say that, one of your exports to the UK is Starbucks. And
yeah.
The whole idea of these enormous coffees.
Sorry, man.
We apologize.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
You're all strung out now, aren't you?
Yeah.
Overamped.
Yeah, we used to have nice little coffee shops. Now we've got a Starbucks in every high street.
And that's high octane, man.
Yeah, man.
Everyone's sort of high on caffeine all the time. It's kind of anxiety. I've gone back to tea.
Yeah, I have too.
They sell that too,
I like the tea.
Yeah, I think it's quite nice to walk into Starbucks and say, I'll have a Lapsang Souchong, please.
Yeah, and the kid goes, wait, what is that? All right.
Yeah, can I get a double mochaccino, whatever?
Yeah, I know, I have problems with it, too. I just stick with coffee, with milk. a couple of practical points. Now, we have, everyone has a lunch break at work, and some, corporate buildings have little parks that you can go to, public space that's corporately sponsored by the building that you work in. But all this stuff are really just tricks. That's not really what you're talking about, being idle. And the interesting thing about having kids, and I don't have any, but I know some people that do, I have cats, is that sometimes you can see in kids, and also I think in animals, real sort of unpolluted idleness.
Well, cats feel no guilt about sleeping all day, do they?
Yeah, no, not at all.
The cats got the right idea because Well, firstly, they've domesticated themselves, so the food is provided for them.
Yeah.
But we live in the country, and we've got a couple of cats here. But what they do is they love hunting. Now, it's pretty cruel when you see them with a poor little mouse or a rabbit.
Yeah.
But in a way, they work in the ideal way for the idler, which is long periods of doing nothing and then a little frenetic bout of activity.
Yeah, but don't you feel proud of them, though, a little bit? Like, you know, look at you, you killed a thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
It keeps the vermin out of our house, too.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a sort of practical use.
Yeah.
But then the way they sleep and their sleep positions, I mean, they totally abandon themselves to sleep.
Yeah.
They sprawl out and, you know, they enjoy themselves. I think animals do take pleasure in life, actually. And, you know, when you watch birds, sometimes birds can seem to be flying around for the fun of it rather than just for catching food.
And to have these observations, Tom, you actually have to give yourself some idle time.
I think that's right, but it doesn't need to be that hard. I mean, you know, walking is a great thing to do. You know, can you leave a little bit earlier in the morning and walk to your place of work?
I'm going to leave now.
No,
are you kidding?
No.
After talking to you and reading the book a little bit, me and Riley are out of here.
Yeah, we're out.
But let me say that to the people out there listening, How to Be Idle by Tom Hoskinson is a clever book. It's witty, and it's also very informative about something we might have lost touch with. Thanks for being with us, Tom Hoskinson.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
You take care. So we'll come back. It's right now, I guess, I'm supposed to sleep on my back on the floor with my hands and my legs up in the air and wait for my wife to rub my stomach. If we're going to come back and get into, there's a lot of military base closings and a lot of implications about the economy, about the military itself, we'd like to explore. So stay with us. It's Air America Radio. It's 47 past the hour.
Hi, this is former Labor Secretary Robert Reich. And when I want to keep pace with the job market, I tune into Morning Sedition's Monday Job Listing every week on Air America Radio.
9978-800-603-9978-800-603-9978.
Because we went past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Yeah.
Hey, Kayla, you got any?
Free gum?
Jews. Jews.
Free gum? Free gum?
Wait a minute. Back dueling replays.
All right. Yeah, so we're going to talk about these base closings here in just a second. Let me see. 33. Base closing, Riley.
Mm-hmm.
They're thinking about closing 33 bases, and I guess they're going to do it. And I guess they're going to make a series of mega bases. Is that the deal? They're going to set up mega bases next to the mega churches?
Well, it might well be next to the mega churches. What you've got is a situation where they are moving things out of one region of the country into another region of the country. In addition to the 33 base closings, they're going to consolidate or reduce the size of 29 more bases.
See, now, this brings up, there's a lot of issues. There are local economies at stake here with some of these base closings. There's also the criticism. Paul Krugman wrote a piece that was very provocative today, saying that, you know, that our military is being, you know, is already overextended. It is not as effective as it should be, and that this is just another, you know, part of that. That, you know, this is, if he's going to close bases for economic reasons, Rumsfeld, that they should start pulling the guys out of Iraq. They should start presenting a plan over there to get everyone out and to level this thing off. I mean, and then there's the issue of, you know, which economies are going to, you know, be bolstered by this? Where are these bases going to be? Is it part of, also, are they going to be putting more money into bases abroad? You know, is this part of an imperial plan? I've seen a lot of different articles, a lot of different angles on this.
Well, it's interesting because the overseas component of this is the subject of controversy within the Pentagon. That's because there was a report by a government commission that looked at overseas military bases. They sent Congress a report that included some criticism of Donald Rumsfeld's strategy, which is essentially to make this leaner, meaner fighting force, and that means closing a lot of these bases. And the panel, Rumsfeld's people forced the panel to actually delete the critical part from their website.
Because they thought that it was too quick a plan, that it was too big a plan?
Well, that they thought that there were problems in his overall strategy. This is something Rumsfeld has been pursuing for a long time. It's one of the reasons why he was so heavily criticized for its conduct of the Iraq War. And that is that you know, you kind of move away from these big-ticket bombers and fighters and that sort of thing, and you make a leaner, more strategically oriented fighting force. And it has not worked in Iraq. Rumsfeld apparently has decided, since he's going to be around for a second Bush term, that he's going to press forward with this in the face of the criticism that he's getting from Iraq. His apparent strategy, at least according to one report I saw, was, well, Iraq will take care of itself at this point.
Yeah, which is crazy. There's also the issue of that once these bases are closed, what happens to the land? Is it, does it become open for development in some areas like Treasure Island and San Francisco? It seems that the military is holding the land hostage, either to, you know, jack up the price or become partners with developers. You know,
yeah.
There's a lot of question about what happens to the land after its release, because some of it has been utilized in a very beneficial way.
Well, yeah, a lot of it has been utilized in a beneficial, well, not a lot of it. There are certain areas that have been extremely well developed, and it's, you know, some of these communities have made out like bandits, you know, 10 years after they've closed these bases. Others, like you point out in San Francisco, the land is still just lying there.
Well, let's talk to some people on base if they're out there, or in cities where bases are being closed and how that's going to affect your life. 866-303-2270. Like we said, there's a lot of angles on this particular issue. I mean, Treasure Island is primo real estate.
It
out
is
there in
primo
San Francisco.
Real estate. There's a lot of places, a lot of bases, like the experience with the Presidio. Again, primo real estate.
Yeah.
They've turned it into a national park. It's been relatively successful in the same city, in San Francisco. In many instances, however, you find that bases closing end up creating ghost towns, and you end up moving jobs out of one region into another.
866-303-2270. Hey, look, we're doing the Monday Liberal Agenda to
yeah.
the Streisand compound. Here are your marching orders for today. One, disguise yourself as John Bolton and cut into the front of the Star Wars Revenge of the Sith line yelling, I'm John Bolton, and I'll do whatever damn well please. Whatever I damn well please. Is that how you pronounce it? Scythe or Sith? Scythe, Sith, right? Two, beg for sex. If your partner refuses, set up a lectern on the bed and filibuster. Three, protest the future closure of 33 military bases by nominating them for inclusion on the American Registry of Historic Fascist Buildings. Four, mark the 50th birthday of claymation icon Gumby by outing him.
Ooh.
Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Hope you enjoyed Monster Law this weekend. There was another little show that opened this weekend that you should check out called Civil War in Uzbekistan. It's hilarious. Wake up, sheeple. The Hollywood crap wagon just parked in front of your brain. 866-303-2270, reflections on the base closing. Is it the imperialism? Is it crushing your state's economy? Is it affecting your life personally? 866-303-2270. We'll talk to you a second here on Air America Radio. Past the hour. Good morning. It's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
How you doing, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, self-righteous people? How are you? And, of course, lurking conservatives, nice to have you, and just regular folks trying to get their Monday started. Good morning. We're taking calls right now at 866-303-2270 in relation to the military's plans to close down 33 bases. This is Rumsfeld plan. This is streamlining. This is some people see it as, you know, if they're going to move these, make larger bases. Some of them, some people, I've read some conspiracy angles. I've read some theories that they're moving, you know, everything into the red states in order to bolster a crystal fascist zombie brigade army. But it is pretty clear that some of these, you know, most of these larger bases, most of the new money in the military is going to go into red states, as we were just talking about.
Yeah, the net gains of these base closings things will largely be in the South. With the, right, I don't know whether people consider Maryland to be part of the South, but
yes.
See, Maryland is a unique case. What they're doing is closing the Walter Reed Army Hospital that is located in the District of Columbia. So they're going to lose a number of jobs, but they're moving it and combining it with the Naval facility in Bethesda. So it's going to be one large place for both Army and Navy.
And also they're building new bigger bases overseas, which some people are speculating is part of the Grand Imperial Plan of Rumsfeld. And now we got who is someone who is currently in the Army. Ray, how are you? Nice to talk to you. What's going on?
Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Mark and Mark. Love the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Here's my comment. Yes, I am in the Army. I've got 24 years in. I'm still on active duty. And my comment is this. I filed this under B for another broken promise.
Mm.
I guess that would be A. I don't know. Part of the retirement package that you get when you retire is, and that they promise you throughout your career, is free medical and also PX and commissary privileges,
mm-hmm.
to help you save a little.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if your next base is hours away, that doesn't do you much good. I just bought a house here in Georgia, and now the base that was to be here is on the list to close.
Oh, my God. So now you might have to travel 3 or 4 hours just to get the kind of health coverage that you've grown to expect to activate some of your retirement benefits that occur on the base, and also to make purchases at the promised price of the commissary.
It's interesting, Ray, though. Georgia would have a net increase of almost 7,500 jobs, military and civilian, under this plan.
Yes, but they're consolidating at bases that are hours away from me.
Mm-hmm. I see your point, yeah.
Yeah, they're moving them from, say, another state to a facility that's already here. They're not creating new facilities that are going to be spread throughout the state.
Yeah, I wonder how they're going to accommodate that. They're probably not. They're probably going to let folks like you fall through the cracks with these broken promises.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thanks for your call, Ray.
Thanks, Ray.
That's interesting because, the one thing you don't hear a lot about is that, the military is updating its Internet access in terms of, making purchases at the commissary over the Internet. Or how are they going to accommodate these guys who are still active military but not necessarily, next to the base? Because some of these bases are reservists. Some of these bases are National Guard.
National Guards, yeah.
And, these guys that are going to be, left hours and hours from, half the reason that they might have joined the forces.
Well, it's interesting because you have, on the one hand, some of the bigger facilities, the submarine base up at Groton. Big, big place. Connecticut's going to lose 8,000 jobs as a result of that closing.
Hmm.
Fort Monmouth in Jersey, net loss 3,700 jobs in the state. These are big facilities. And Fort Monmouth is perplexing because, I went up on their website, and they deal with a lot of communications, high-tech, IT kind of stuff. So why would they close it?
I don't know. It's a good question. We've got Darren listening in Brooklyn on 1190 WLIB. What's up, Darren?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey, Darren. Good. How you doing?
All right. Just a quick question, or comment, I guess. How is it that the Republicans can get away with something, closing military bases, and I don't hear the criticism of that they're endangering national security, or the kind of criticism that Kerry got for proposing these.
Oh, dude, Paul Krugman today, read his op-ed in the Times today. He basically is saying, in other words, the people who get us into Iraq, who got us into Iraq, have done exactly what they falsely accused Bill Clinton of doing. They have stripped America of its capacity to respond to real threats.
I'm glad I'm not the only one with that's thinking that. So that's,
oh, yeah. No,
that's
you're
basically my comment.
Yeah, and he's a brilliant guy, which puts you right in line with his thinking. I mean, he's basically saying this is stretching it too thin, that if they don't have a plan to get the guys out of Iraq, we have no real ability to respond to true global threats, and that this is just part of a scheme for Rumsfeld to cut corners and perhaps privatize the military.
Well, see, the thing, Mark,
thanks for your call.
And the important thing of what he's talking about here,
mm-hmm.
is that this is what is going to bring politicians of very differing ideologies. For example, a guy like Corzine here in the New York area, in New Jersey, along with Trent Lott. They are all going to attack these base closings based on the issue of national security. Should we, and the issue of fighting a war in Iraq that we don't seem to have enough facilities or resources to fight now.
Yeah, it's It's brain numbing stuff. I don't know exactly what Rumsfeld is up to, but it seems like there's a lot of different points of view on this. It seems to me that a lot of people in the military are being, you know, left out of this loop, and that, you know, that the plan, that the idea initially going into Iraq with the shock and awe, with the streamlined military, you know, did not work as a promotional tool.
Well, it didn't. But you know what's amazing about this, Mark, is that a lot of people, I think a lot of people inside the Beltway, particularly in the political establishment, thought Rumsfeld would never have the guts to do this, given what did happen in Iraq, that he would not plow forward with a plan that everybody knew he had beforehand.
Well, I'll tell you, there's no one, you know, more sort of, you know, Teflon as Rumsfeld in terms of how he's insulated in this administration. That guy should have been, he should have been kicked out months ago over Abu Ghraib, over a number of, over even the WMDs. I mean, this guy is just untouchable. So it just seems he operates in his own world where he just makes all these calls that have nothing to do with reality. It's all based on speculation that, look, people will adapt. Eventually the stuff's going to settle down and they'll all be grateful in the future.
Well, do you think that any of these base closings, by the way, and all these savings that they're talking about accomplishing, you think that will mean that they'll be finally be able to get some armor under the stinking Humvees where American troops are getting blown up in Iraq?
I don't even know. I don't even know.
My guess is no.
Richard, listening to 1190 LIB in New Jersey. Good morning. What's up, buddy?
Hey, Richard.
Yeah, hi. Just 2 points. You guys do a good show. Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
They're doing to Connecticut what they did to Massachusetts under Nixon.
Interesting.
To Otis and can't think of the other base, right, an Air Force base. Also, I heard the other day that it's going to cost $1 billion to move the facilities from Monmouth to Aberdeen.
Oh, is that Aberdeen, Maryland, right?
Yeah, Aberdeen Proving Grounds in Maryland.
In Maryland. See, the thing I don't understand about Fort Monmouth is that it seems to be a place where a lot of high-tech work is being done. It's communications, it's internet, it's technology. So why move it? Why shut it down?
Well, it used to be the Signal Corps. It is a Signal Corps. It used to be a school also years ago during the Vietnam era.
Mm-hmm.
Like Fort Gordon, Georgia was the Southeastern Signal School.
Okay.
Monmouth was Signal Corps training for the troops who were in the Signal Corps.
All right, well, thanks for your call. It's a good observation.
I'm going
to do a little research on that other base. I want to do a little research. He sort of provoked my brain there.
What? Oh,
about
the
Nixon base closings.
Oh, yeah, in Massachusetts.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's interesting. Hey, listening to us in Connecticut, streaming, Gita, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, it's Gita.
I'm sorry,
Gita.
Don't worry about it.
I'm worrying now.
See, you got him going now.
Great.
I'm sorry. What's up, Gita?
Okay. Honestly, it's not just the Groton subbase. It's also Electric Boat. It's also about 1,000 different jobs that are connected to the subbase being in Groton.
Mm-hmm.
And it will affect the entire state.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Well, that's... Right. Well, thank you for that. I mean, this is what the statewide implication, the city, the community implications, is that when there's a base around, it affects the entire economy of the state one way or the other.
No doubt.
Because it's not everybody's not purchasing stuff at the commissary. You know, state economies are driven by the thousands of guys and women who are there at the base.
Well, yeah. And remember that this we're talking now about different businesses that do business with a base and the ability of people in those businesses to find housing, which of course, fuels the real estate market. There are a lot of things that are that Gita very correctly points out are all interconnected, and it will devastate the corridor from Norwich up through New London up through Groton. That will be absolutely devastated, that area.
One last call, Sandy. Quickly, how are you, Sandy, in New Jersey?
Hey, Sandy.
How you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
I think this has to do with privatization.
Yeah.
I think if they do away with these private jobs, that's an excuse to develop more private contracts with Halliburton and
with military contractors. That's
and
interesting.
I really think that's part of it.
Well, thanks for that call. And that's also going to stoke me to do a little research. I appreciate that. I'll look into that, Sandy.
It certainly would be a win-win situation for Rumsfeld, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, that's certainly what he does.
Yeah,
exactly. It's that sort of weird kind of free market, militaristic, neocon death cult philosophy, of everything being privatized. 16 past the hour, Air America Radio. When we come back, we're going to have Noah Feldman in a little bit to talk to us a little bit about Iraqi Civil War. This is a guy, he's a constitutional constitutional genius.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he helped put together the original Iraqi Constitution. He's a frequent guest on our show. Looking forward to talking to him. And we'll that's it. We'll see you in a few minutes, 16 past the hour.
Hi, this is Congressman Gerald Nadler from New York's 8th District, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
550-6146. That's 1-800-550-6146. 1-800-550-6146.
Oh, man, it's got my neurotransmitter chemicals going. It's weird this how effective. It always gets me, AC/DC. 21 past the hour, Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
You.
You're listening to Morning Sedition. This is the Morning Sedition job listing for today, Monday, the 16th. All right, look, just Friday we talked to a woman who wrote the article about Dr. David Hager. He's the evangelical nut job who's on the Reproductive Health Drugs Committee at the FDA. Well, despite his family values rhetoric, his ex-wife says he regularly sodomized her against her will for years. Hager is up for reappointment in June. Could this scandal cost him his job? Well, we found the job posted, but it looks like whoever wrote the one ad couldn't get the accusations out of their mind. Here's our Morning Sedition Monday job listing. The FDA may need someone to fill a hole. We are not sure this opening will be available, but if it is, we will be looking for someone who can stand behind their work. The successful applicant will know how to treat people under them and will be willing to back up their fellow employees. Are you someone who seeks creative alternatives, someone who sees opportunity where others see only a void? The ideal person for this job will know how to ease their own passage through some very sensitive areas. This is a position that demands someone who knows when to push, when to pull back, and what to do in a tight situation. In addition, you will be in charge of employee turnover.
Oh, Lord.
Please note, this is an entry-level position. Applicant must be willing to start at the bottom. If you think you fit in, please approach us.
Fit in? Fit in?
That's the one you're going to pick up on, Riley? The entire thing?
Well, I'm just figuring out that. That would be the last one to make sure I update my resume. How about you, Chris?
Oh, wow.
Doody.
Where was that one?
That little sound effect from something.
Freak-off?
All right, anyway.
Doody.
What is that? Where did that come from?
I used to love the fat guys.
Freak-off?
Right. Jews. Here we go. Let's get back. Whoa. Lost my headset there. I'm laughing. Is it okay to have fun on Monday? Is it okay?
No.
People are out there going, that is repulsive. What is wrong with other people driving off the road? Two people called last week, right? Yeah, Friday. Called Brendan in the booth, said, I almost wrecked my car.
We're not paying.
We almost wrecked the car because they were laughing so hard on that the list of Hager books that we did last week.
Okay, I'm not paying.
We should just call it Filthy Fridays and get on with it. Let's own it.
Yeah, right.
Let's own it. Let's institute it right now. Filthy Fridays from here on out. So let's talk about this. You know, the Afghanistan riots have spread.
Protest!
I'm sorry, that's right. Wrong frame. The protests have spread throughout the region. It was my speculation last week. It wasn't validated, but who were we talking to? Oh, we were talking to the ex-CIA guy. Sure.
Yeah.
Not sure. Schroen.
Schroen, yes.
Well, my speculation was when they reached out to Mohammed Omar.
Mullah Omar,
and said they offered him an amnesty deal. He said, we don't need to hell with you. We're going to do what we're going to do, and we're not in trouble. And the fight goes on. That was a rallying call. And 2 days later, these riots or these protests occurred. They
go
are
ahead,
blaming.
Call them riots if
well,
you want.
No, I mean, I need to reframe
you want
my Pashman brain.
Pashman to come in here?
If I need to reframe my brain, I will reframe my brain. You know, I sometimes you get into these habits because you have to take steps to not censor yourself, but to frame things properly. But anyways, they're blaming now the press here is blaming Newsweek. I don't think that Newsweek or the Newsweek story, which actually broke months ago and was revisited recently, you know, is the bottom line cause of these riots. I think that what we should look at is the broader spectrum of you know, some reactionary Muslim unrest and just, you know, the conditions that we have set by our foreign policy in these areas. I mean, you can't just, you know, the idea that this is Newsweek fault, the idea that that Drudge Report is saying this is the Newsweek riots or the Newsweek protests or whatever he's trying to frame it as is ridiculous.
But you see, Mark, what they're doing here is something that they do all the time. What they're saying is this liberal media has put U.S. soldiers at risk. That's how they're putting this together, and that's why Newsweek apologized.
Why wouldn't we say that the neocon death cult has put American soldiers at risk, has not provided them with the right equipment to fight a war properly, will not acknowledge war dead, does not provide them the type of services they need when they come back on, in terms of mental health and in some cases regular health coverage. I mean, where is that from? Yeah, it's all Newsweek's fault. And the thing is that some of the press is saying that Newsweek retracted the story. It was not an retraction. It was an apology, you know, prior to more investigation. And how could anyone doubt that some of these ideas were used? I mean, if they were setting, you know, putting women interrogators in there with fake menstrual blood, you know, if they were putting these guys on leashes, if they were, you know, dragging them around and electrocuting them, are you going to tell me that the idea that they might have, you know, flushed parts of the Quran down the toilet is completely out of the over the top? I mean, please. It's not Newsweek's fault for doing a journalistic job here, and I'm sure the truth will reveal itself even more. But these riots, I think, are a direct response to bad foreign policy.
Absolutely.
To war, to destabilizing entire countries. For what? For what?
And they feel that Islam is being disrespected. We're going to talk with Noah Feldman when we come back. He was one of the people that wrote the Provisional Constitution. He's going to talk to us about Iraq. Is it descending into civil war? Stay with us. It's Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Good comes of that. And that's what is happening now. It is disgusting.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey!
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. On the phone with us now, a regular guest on our show, professor of law at the New York University Law School and author of What We Owe Iraq, War and the Ethics of Nation Building. He's also the author of After Jihad, America and the Struggle for Islamic Democracy. Good morning, Noah Feldman. How's it going?
I'm doing good. All is well. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. How you doing, Noah?
I didn't mean to baffle you right out of the gate there with the greeting.
You know it's a hard one.
So, look, but before we get into Iraq, you know, do you think that these protests that are spreading throughout the Islamic world, they can't just be a reaction to this Newsweek article? Don't you think they were triggered and organized on a different level?
No doubt about it. In Afghanistan, you've got a lot of people in the regions, basically warlords, sad to say our allies, who do not want to give up on their control of the country. And our guy, Hamid Karzai, who's the president, would like to limit their control. These guys are using this as an excuse to organize protests that will weaken his government, and it's worked.
Right.
And they would have found another excuse if it hadn't been this one, which does not mean that we should be a lot more careful about the kinds of stuff we do in interrogations.
Well, it just seemed to me that last week, or I think it was a week ago today, they offered Mullah Omar Mohammed an amnesty deal. He refused and said, we're still fighting. And then 3 days later, the protests break out.
Not a coincidence.
Right.
And the truth is that these guys are still fighting, and there's a connection in that sense, if only in that sense, between Afghanistan and Iraq. On both sides, you've got a lot of people who don't think they were beaten. The game's not over for them. You've got former Taliban thinking that they still have a shot of weakening the central government and coming back to power. It's a remote possibility, but it's not crazy. And in Iraq, you've got a big insurgency. The only thing holding all the insurgents together is that they all want us out, and they think that if we do leave, it'll be a win for them.
Noah, are we talking about, in terms of the deaths that we've seen in Afghanistan, is this Afghan forces or the Afghani army killing the protesters? Are the protesters armed? How is this working?
You know, distinguishing protesters and civilians from militiamen, or frankly, distinguishing the military from militias is increasingly difficult in both of these places. You're talking about countries where almost every man and probably a substantial number of the women and children have their own guns. And the reports are not specific enough from Afghanistan, I don't think, for anyone to determine who's really getting killed. But there's a challenge to the central military, and the military wants to respond.
But apparently to the misinformation mill out of the neocon death cult's office, that there is enough information to say that it's Newsweek's fault. It's unbelievable.
Well, that's a really interesting question. You know, Newsweek didn't fully retract their story.
No, I know, exactly.
But the truth is that it seems to me highly unlikely that this would have been a matter of policy on the U.S. side, not impossible that an isolated incident could have happened.
Right.
And, you know, if the story is the wrong story, boy, do they have a lot to answer for.
Okay, well, let's shift over to Iraq now, because now we're hearing the language that, you know, everybody was, you know, very careful not to to engage in, certainly on a press level, which is that, you know, there some people have characterized this as a civil war from the beginning, but now, you know, more mainstream media outlets are saying that there is a civil war going on.
You know, I think you have a civil war when my side is killing your civilians and your side is killing my civilians. We're almost there in Iraq. We're not quite there yet. Right now in Iraq, you've got the Sunni insurgents are killing Shia and Kurdish civilians in large numbers. In the last 2 weeks, there have been 500 deaths as a result of more than 70 attacks. That's in 2 weeks alone. On the other hand, what we don't yet have is Shia militias or the government retaliating by killing Sunni civilians. If we get that, I think we'll be in a civil war. That's when we'll know we've entered a civil war. But the only thing stopping that from happening right now is incredible patience on the part of the Shia. I mean, how many of your people are going to get killed before you run out of steam and say, okay, look, I'm going to retaliate?
No, Condoleezza Rice, the Secretary of State, was over in Iraq and says that the government ought to do more to include Sunni Arabs. Isn't that rewarding bad behavior at a point?
It is rewarding bad behavior. On the other hand, when you're facing somebody in an insurgency, you've got really two choices. You can be totally unaccommodating and hope you can win the insurgency militarily, or you can say, look, I'm willing to give you guys something if you'll put down your weapons. Frankly, if we could have won the insurgency at any time in the last 2 years, we could have avoided sending out an arm to these Sunnis, but that was never realistic because the Sunnis have 20% of the population and we don't have enough soldiers there. That's the bottom line. So a lot of us have been saying, really, for the last 18 months, that in addition to fighting the insurgents militarily, you've got to offer them a political option so they can come in from the cold. And frankly, this is great to hear the Secretary of State saying so, but where was she saying this, you know, 18 months ago? It's a little bit too late.
No, in the time leading up to the Iraq elections this past January, we heard a lot about a guy named Muqtada al-Sadr who had organized the poor and disaffected in Iraq, Shia specifically, into an army. Why hasn't he mobilized what forces he has against the Sunni insurgency, given that he's Shia and given the fact that, as you correctly point out, the Sunni insurgents are attacking Shia civilians?
So far, the reason is that there's nothing in it for Muqtada al-Sadr. He's a very self-interested guy, like any politician, only more so. And at the present, he's been sort of brought into the government and basically paid off by us. We told him, we don't want your militia just running around killing people, so we're going to pay you money to sit on your hands and consolidate your own local political power. So if he thinks that he can emerge as a bigger leader or the leader of a counterinsurgency by doing something like that, you might actually see him doing it. But right now, he's listening to the rest of the Shia parties who are saying, hold back, hold back. And the key reason he hasn't done this is that Ayatollah Sistani, who's much senior to him and is the most respected religious leader in Iraq, has told him and everybody else, do not retaliate. Sistani has been very, very restrained in this respect. And that's why his health is the single most important fact in Iraq right now. And just over the weekend, one of his senior aides in Baghdad and the aide's son were killed, and I am very concerned, and we should all be concerned, about a potential attempt on Sistani's life.
Oh, man. So now, Noah, tell us exactly, you know, it all seems so precarious. And in your best hopes as somebody who was, you know, at the beginning of this in helping, you know, design a constitution and design a system of government over there, I mean, what is the best that can happen and the worst that can happen given the events that are going on?
It is extremely precarious. On the political side, the constitutional side, the Shia and the Kurds have been doing just fine. The constitutional structure they have in place is working in that it's designed to help them make deals with each other and bring the country to the creation of a government. That so far has been fine. What hasn't happened, though, is that we haven't yet got Sunnis, which is to say 20% of the population, participating in that political process. In a best-case scenario, the insurgents decide that they can't win the fight militarily, and so they might as well see as much of the pie as they can by ordinary politics. They begin to come into the government, they negotiate their way to a solution, and we get a power-sharing arrangement between the different groups. It'll look pretty much like a very rough-and-ready democracy.
So that's the Sunni part of the insurgency, so that doesn't answer for some of the more extreme jihadist part of the insurgency.
That's right, and the really extreme jihadis, the internationalists, they're never going to give up.
Right.
And the goal in the scenario I just described would be for the Sunnis, the former Ba'athists, types like that, the bad guys whom we'd be reaching out to, have to turn around and marginalize the jihadis, because they've been working with them. They know where they are. They know how they're coming into the country. They know their processes. Again, that's best case.
Right.
The worst case scenario is that the Sunni insurgency just continues to grow. We get retaliation from the Shia side, either because something happens to Sistani or because ordinary people say enough's enough. And at that point, we're going to be involved in an actual civil war, and we're going to be involved on one side of the civil war, and we're not going to be able to control what's going on. I call that scenario Vietnam, but in Lebanon.
Wow. Now, Noah, how long before, in your judgment, the Shia leadership, whether it be Sistani or the people in government, start to lose credibility with the Iraqi people by not responding to this insurgent violence?
It's a delicate balance. From the government standpoint, if the government looks like it's weak, looks like it takes blow after blow after blow and just can't do anything about it, ordinary people, even if they're sympathetic, will just give up on the thing. They'll say, okay, it's nice that you have a government. You guys are decent people, but you're useless to me. Because what's the main point of a government anywhere in any civilization? It's to protect me in my home, to make sure that I'm safe. Long before justice and civil rights, people just don't want to be shot when they go out on the streets. If the government can't deliver that, it will lose legitimacy. On the other hand, I don't think the Sistani would ever lose legitimacy for refusing to retaliate, because he has the kind of religious, traditional authority where he can say, we have suffered. We Shia have always suffered. The Shia have a long history of suffering, and they have a theology of suffering. And we're suffering just like the Imam Hussein did. And I think he can say that more or less indefinitely. And I think he probably will, because I think he sincerely believes it.
No. I read a piece in today's Washington Post. It talks about Operation Matador, which is an American armed force attempt to root out the insurgents. And what this report seems to say is that they're not finding people. What they're finding are these roadside bombs. And something about this, because I'm old enough to remember the Vietnam era, I seem to remember the Viet Cong pursuing an identical type of strategy, having American forces fighting with shadows while they blow up their armored personnel vehicles, their Humvees, and that sort of thing. Is that parallel out of bounds?
You know, Mark, I have, and I'm sure you do too, enormous respect for our soldiers over on the ground in Iraq who
yes.
are, you know, taking tremendous risks and fighting bravely and in a very well-motivated way. When I hear, though, from the brass in Washington or from the spokespeople in Washington, we had a successful operation because we killed 100-and-some-odd insurgents and we wounded 100-and-some-odd insurgents, I think to myself, whoa, this is very Vietnam-like. You cannot report on the success of an operation with a body count. It does not tell you that you accomplished anything. Insurgencies always rely on getting the occupier angry, getting him to kill people, and then saying to the ordinary population, see what these guys do? They just go around killing people. It's very hard to defeat. It's impossible, in fact, to defeat an insurgency just by killing more and more insurgents, even if you've killed the right people. What you've got to do in the long run is develop a local Iraqi support mechanism, that is to say an Iraqi military that can do the fighting for you, and you've got to protect local people. If they're not protected, you are losing the insurgency no matter how many bad guys you kill. So in that sense, at least, I think there's definitely an analogy there.
So let me ask you one last question, Noah. Did you foresee these scenarios when you guys were sitting around thinking about the design of the government? Is all this stuff, have you been surprised?
Yes and no. I think a lot of us who were working on the ground foresaw that disbanding the military was a huge mistake because it would create a large number of extremely angry, unemployed Sunni former military officers. That people definitely foresaw. Another thing that people did anticipate is that the political design had to push the Shia and the Kurds to reach out to the Sunnis, and we needed to do as much as we could to make that happen. Again, that was an ongoing problem. What I think it's fair to say that nobody saw coming, certainly not I, was just the strength and the durability of the insurgency and its strategy of killing ordinary Iraqis. A lot of us thought they'll try to kill us for sure. They might even try to kill Iraqi soldiers, but what would be in it for them in terms of just killing civilians? And I think the truth is that what's in it for them in terms of killing civilians is they're trying to push the country into civil war, because I think if there is a civil war, we will leave. And, you know, there was a piece in the Times the other day saying, why is there an insurgency? It's a mystery. I don't think it's a mystery at all. They're trying to kill civilians to create a civil war, because they figure if there's a civil war, we will cut and run.
Wow. Well, thanks, Nobel. And we'll check back in with you as things unfold, if that's okay.
You betcha.
All right, take care. Good talking. Very smart guy, Noah Feldman, author of After Jihad, America and the Struggle for Islamic Democracy, and also What We Owe Iraq, War and the Ethics of Nation Building, available at morningsedition.com. We'll be back with the morning remembrance. It's 47 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Free 2-week supply of TheraBreath. Dial 1-800-590-9870. That's 1-800-590-9870.
Fifty-one past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Got Greg Proops in the wings, folks. So hang on, okay? Because he's going to come in and he's going to hang out for a while. Always funny. Intelligent and entertaining, Mr. Proops is. Right now, unfortunately, it's time again. It's that time of the week when we here at Morning Sedition take a moment at this time of sorrow to reflect in our morning remembrance.
As the people of the grieving nation come together to mourn, to remember, and finally to find hope, Morning Sedition joins with them to mourn, remember, and find hope as well. And so we bring you the stories of those who have lost their lives, those who inspire us to carry on. Here now is Morning Sedition grief correspondent, Mort Mortensen.
You all right?
Yeah. All right. Thanks. Wilson A. Siebert, admin. Wilson A. Siebert, who helped create some of Madison Avenue's most memorable advertising campaigns, now taking a much-anticipated commercial break from his life. During his career, Siebert won numerous honors for his unparalleled humanitarian work, helping orphans and victims of AIDS. I'm just kidding. He won them for writing ads.
What's the matter, man?
Do you read ads?
Yeah, I do. I can't help it.
I can't be allergic to the ink.
Allergic to advertising.
Yeah, at least my eyes water.
Yeah, I know. It's okay.
That's what's happening now.
All right.
One poster of an ad he did for the Marines, Mark,
yeah,
with the slogan, "We don't promise you a rose garden," was placed on display at the Smithsonian Institution, right next to a subsequent slogan, "We also don't promise you an education, pension, medical care, or your life back either, so shut up and fight, you insect. Your parents think you're dead and the president's forgotten you. Oh, and don't even think about kissing another man on the lips, even if he can speak Arabic."
Wow. That takes up a whole page almost.
I know. It wasn't a very good one. Siebert also wrote the famous cigarette jingle that went, "Chesterfield 101s, a silly millimeter longer." A phrase describing the cigarette's length as well as the daily growth rate of the average lung tumor. It's a silly milliliter longer.
Imagine that. Oh, man. You need some Kleenex?
Ah, you got it?
Yeah, here you go.
Thanks, man.
Oh, God. That's all right, man.
A lot of dust in the facility. Yeah, Siebert requested his remains be buried, preceded by an announcement that completely misrepresents his body's actual contents. Zhang Chengqiao, one of China's Gang of Four. Zhang Chengqiao, one of China's Gang of Four, largely responsible for the brutalities of the Cultural Revolution, and even worse, that crappy pseudo-punk hit, "I Love a Man in Uniform," is gone. He's just gone.
All right.
The Chinese government declared Zhang officially dead last week, 2 years after he really died. He was 88, or in Chinese communist years, 17 and a half five-year plans. Right now, historians are laughing their asses off at these, right?
Come on, stay with us, man.
Tseng's greatest moment of public notoriety came in 1980 when he and other top Chinese communists were charged by other top Chinese communists with doing things top Chinese communists do when they're not being prosecuted by other top Chinese communists. Ooh, that was a lot funnier last night.
It reads clever, though.
Yeah, it's very clever.
Reads.
I could put that into a book. Maybe I should sell. During his show trial in 80, Zeng not only refused to answer questions about his crimes, but also pretended to go to sleep, whereupon he was repeatedly anally raped by Bush advisor David Hager.
Okay.
What?
That, no, I understand.
You don't like blood.
What, no?
Poor Hager?
No.
What?
No.
What, you're in favor of the... You like this Hager guy? Is that what you're saying?
No. It's just it's a theme that we're going to have to get past eventually. You know, it's not... It wasn't... It's had nothing to do with you. You all right, man?
All right.
Your eyes are watering a little bit.
Oh, I got allergies.
Yeah.
Somebody chopping onions?
Yeah. I think there might be somebody chopping onions. So only two people died this week that you care about?
Well, only two funny ones. It's us. Oh, thanks for bringing that up. Thanks for bringing things down, man.
What, I didn't bring anything down.
You're such a drag. I
oh
can't believe
God.
It.
Oh, my God. Why
you laughed at Go Bananas. And
Go Bananas. Where's the other place?
Now another recurring theme of this show.
Stickies. And Covington.
Stickies and Covington. Is that gig still going? Did you do that last week?
I held a raffle there. I didn't get paid. I got paid in drink tickets.
we get fruits in.
Not the first time, though.
We can go. We go over the entire Stickies tour. We'll talk to Craig about ha-has and funnies and Stickies. And now we're breaking character again. Thank you for the...
It's all right, man.
All right.
This is more is saying, who's chopping onions?
we'll be back with Greg Proops and much more, right? Riley, we got more things to do.
Oh, yeah,
we?
Man. We got iNews 5000,
fun
Liberal
time.
Aggressor. Bunch
fun.
Of stuff coming up.
Liberal Aggressor.
There
fun.
You go.
Okay.
Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's morning sedition on Air America Radio. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. How are you? Wake up, sheeple. It's 8 o'clock. You probably should you should be up and getting ready to go. Maybe this will help you. Let me help you out. Sometimes the headlines are kind of, you know, they can be tough to figure out. So luckily we've got this machine here, the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's kick it up. And you know what? Brendan, P.W. McDonald, our producer here, he did the sound for this. And I just saw an email recently, someone going, I thought you guys were going to put that on the site for a phone ring. someone loved this thing.
That would make a great ringtone.
I'm telling
Brendan,
you, man.
You got a second call.
We're missing big marketing opportunities here. All right, here we go. Let's feed this machine some headlines because, you know, let's keep the let's not break the fourth wall. Is there a fourth wall on radio or what? There's a machine here. You see it, right, Riley?
Yeah, I see
K.O.,
it.
Do you see the machine?
Of course.
Okay, good.
Yep.
So now it's been validated. From the New York Times, U.S. is warning North Koreans on nuclear tests. U.S. is warning North Koreans on nuclear tests. Translation. Networks prepare Korean war drama. MASH 2, Son of Klinger. All right. From Fox News, Las Vegas celebrates 100th birthday. Las Vegas celebrates 100th birthday. Translation. Moral cesspool celebrates 100 years of purposelessness. Is that rough?
Yeah.
Why is that? Well, you feel bad for Las Vegas?
No, not for a nanosecond.
From Reuters, school regrets dog vivisection. School regrets dog vivisection. Translation, student finds paw in cafeteria chili. Sues. Okay, or let's try another one. And refeed that in there. School regrets dog vivisection. Dog vivisections end. Local homeless nervous. All right, here's a couple things before we get proofs out in here. I went to see The Kingdom of Heaven with Orlando Bloom. How come no one's talking about that movie? All you guys are talking about the Star Wars movie, and for some reason I can care less about the Star Wars movie. I haven't seen the last couple. Apparently, Proops was in one of them. We'll ask him about that. He was a voice of an alien or something.
Uh-oh.
So I go see Kingdom of Heaven with Orlando Bloom. This is a Ridley Scott movie.
It's
a Crusades movie. You know, he made Gladiator. I was hoping for the same kind of, you know. I could watch Gladiator weekly. It sort of gets you going. It's very concise. Crusades a little more complicated than what was going on in Gladiator. And not that it necessarily covers the Crusades effectively. Historically, I'm sure there was some revisionism in it. I don't really know what the history of the thing was, but I got to be honest with you. Someone asked me, can Orlando Bloom act? My answer, don't know. I have no idea. I know he was compelling, that there seemed to be some emotional reactions going on that were moving to me.
Okay.
But, you know, the guy, he must be as tall as his chair here, as my stool,
as
scrawny. No, he must be like 4 feet tall, and he's like a toothpick, and he's playing a knight. It was unbelievable he could even hold the sword, you know, let alone work it effectively. But he plays sort of a Jesus-y. He's a little Jesus-y, this character.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah. As a knight, he's a moral knight. You know, he's a guy that is protecting the people. That I'm not going to go too far into the movie because I've been accused of ruining movies before, so I'm not going to do that. I will say though, apparently this trouble in the Middle East has been going on a long time.
Now, did he hear the voice of God or anything?
No, he didn't hear the voice of God, but you know, he was sort of a man of the people. But you know, this is about Muslims. It's about Christians. There's a schism within the Christians. You know, some are more war prone and the other, like, I don't know the history. I wish I did. But I'll tell you what's weird is I walk out of there, I'm watching this because there is sort of a moral ending.
Okay.
About conscience, about what religion means and what, you know, Christianity means on some level. And of course I walk out completely selfish saying, man, I should be doing more of something. You know, it really did provoke that in me because I started to think about our own show and about the criticism I get sometimes in terms of how I talk about Christianity, that a lot of people believe that when I talk about the Christo-fascist zombie brigade, about the religious right, about people who aren't really Christians, and I get mail that says, look, you can't say that about all Christianity, and I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started to think, actually, because of Kingdom of Heaven, oddly, that we should begin to engage, you know, some of these progressive Christians and liberal Christians who are actually out doing the real work in the world of people, you know, helping homeless people, helping people with AIDS, you know, feeding people, doing things to fight for legislation that actually protects people, actually honoring some of the liberal values we purport to have here. And we don't talk a lot about people that aren't, you know, on the radio, aren't on television talking about what they're doing. These are people that work in a very selfless fashion, and things happen. And then coincidentally, if there are coincidences, I do my shows at Gotham this weekend, and I meet four former divinity students who all met in divinity school, and all of them are out. You know, one of the guys is from Georgia. He's doing a lot of work with capital punishment cases in terms of, you know, sort of identifying whether or not many of these people who are accused mm-hmm. of murder, many of them are people that they're poor people that were not able to get diagnoses of mental illness when they were younger. It was this whole area of capital punishment activism that I hadn't heard of. Another guy I met, this other kid is here in New York City. He's helping homeless people with AIDS in dealing with the health crisis there and some people that aren't able to get health care. And it was all of a sudden I just come across all these people that are actually out there doing things and said they are tied into an entire network of progressive priests, of progressive Christians outreach, and just, you know, people were doing outreach. And I was very curious to sort of talk to some of them. I hope there's a way we can encapsulate some of that without it, you know, making people sort of go, it's a little too heavy, too early in the morning.
But you know what? There are a lot of little things, Mark. There are people in this city, and a friend of mine kind of told me about this once some years ago. There are people in New York and across this country who do the little things. They're not even part of organized groups. A friend of mine would go to the store, he'd buy a bunch of stuff, he'd make sandwiches and you know, whatever else he could for homeless people, and then he would go to various places where he knew the homeless congregated, and without a word, without asking them for anything, without saying I'm from whatever, without proselytizing, none of that, just opened up the trunk of his car, opened up and started giving out sandwiches to people who were hungry.
Yeah.
And he did this every five nights a week. I don't think he did it seven, but he did it five nights a week for an awfully long time. Just a little incremental way to make somebody else's life a little bit better.
Sure, I want to engage with some of these people, and these aren't just obviously progressive Christians. These are just people doing the work. And now that we're living in a time where this administration's policies, you know, around bankruptcy, around Social Security, around taxation, around health care, around insurance, that a lot of people that never thought they'd be falling through the cracks are going to be falling through the cracks. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that are going to happen in the next couple of years to individuals who thought they would never have to face the kind of crisis as they're facing because of Republican policy and because of the adapt or die, you know, idea of free market capitalism that the neocon death cults are pushing. And I want to keep on top of that. I want to make sure that I understand what the public looks like out there and who's suffering and why and who's actually doing things to help it, to help the public and to help the people that are suffering. Because, you know, looking out for the people that can't, the not-haves, or what do they call it?
Have-nots.
Have-nots, is part of, you know, liberal policy. It's part of the values that we claim to hold so, you know, true. And I just see a lot of people paying a lot of lip service to a lot of crap. I see a lot of people that, you know, talk intellectually about what needs to be done. A lot of 427s who, you know, who may be doing the work, but we only talk to people that are at the head or spokesman for these activism
groups.
Oh,
you mean the 527.
527, sorry. I was thinking of a 427K. Yeah. You know, the people that are in charge of the money that I'm supposed to retire on. But, you know, I just want to engage. You know, and here's let me just cover this real quick before we get out to get Greg Proops on here. Here's an email. Mark Maron, I thought you might be interested in eating an alternative and protein-packed food. If so, check out the book Critter Cuisine, which highlights insects in a very delicious way. This is a thank you for all the insight and laughs. Your Petaluma advocate, Carol. I don't know with
Petaluma?
Yeah, Petaluma.
You know about Petaluma.
Yeah, I like that area.
It used to be famous for chickens.
Chickens.
That was,
and then,
they used to call it Chickaluma. They used to have all these chicken farms, apparently.
Right, and then it sadly got famous for the Klaus. Who was the little girl that was murdered out there?
Oh, so, Polly Klaus. Yeah.
And also, I think what's his name? The last one who killed his wife, Lacey. He was from that area as well.
Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Now, yeah, and here, this is something else sent me. Dear Mark Maron, I'm a librarian, and while checking some reel of film this morning, came upon the enclosed article about plotters. Apparently, the current-day Crystal Fascist Zombie Brigade had its antecedents.
Antecedents.
Yes. You know, and he sent me a Newark Evening News from Monday, January 15th, 1940, dude. 1940.
Gee, that's even before I was born.
Yes. Federal authorities said today that the members of the pro-fascist Christian Front arrested over the weekend on charges of plotting forcible overthrow of the United States government were only part of a large group still under investigation. This was apparently a group of anti-Semitic Christian radicals who aligned themselves with the policies of Hitler. And they were, you know, and oddly, 12 of the men were actually members of the New York National Guard. One was a captain. So these are sort of antecedents to what we were talking about. Thanks a lot, James, for this very interesting bit of history. I appreciate it. We'll be back at 16 past the hour. We're going to have Greg Proops out here, so hang out.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
That's cabinet refacing from Sears Home Services, 1-800-828-1200. That's 1-800-828-1200.
Twenty-one past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
Sarah America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I don't know how you do. You know Greg Proops? Of course you know him. If you don't, you'd recognize him. We were just talking about that before. Whose Line Is It Anyway? You've been on Jimmy Kimmel Live.
Yeah.
You've done. What was the show you used to be on that you probably are ashamed of to put in your credits?
Rendezvous.
Well,
I'm not ashamed, baby. It was the most intellectual of all the dating shows.
Oh, my God.
You know, Fifth Wheel is just so bereft of any kind of stimulation, and my show was really the one that got people talking, I think.
Hey, wait a minute. What have you been on ABC Family?
Oh, boy.
Whose Line runs an ABC Family in Sunday?
Really?
Yeah.
Does Robertson know about this?
Yeah, you know, and we're the gayest show on TV. I don't know if you've ever watched
yeah,
it.
You know, ABC Family was originally Robertson's network.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was
okay.
The Family Channel. Then it went to Fox Family Channel. Then ABC, Disney woke up and decided to buy it, so it became ABC Family.
Greg Proops can do it all. Family Fair, Family. Not Family Fair.
Oh, dude, I'm proud of that.
Yeah, because the subtext is so profound. There's a lot of things going on. There's some literal messages going on right now that we don't even understand.
Well, he's fast, though, man. I've seen him on Whose Line Is It Anyway. I've seen you on Whose Line Is It Anyway.
Thank you,
buddy. One of the fastest human beings I've ever seen. Mentally,
I'm the specky one, by the way, for your listeners. I'm the one with the glasses. Not the rich one, not the tall one, not the bald one, not the black guy.
Not the black guy?
Not the black guy.
We were just talking about that black guy, Wayne Brady. He said he saw you on Wayne Brady's show. You saw him on that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not Wayne Brady's biggest fan.
Wayne is actually very, very funny. I did a chat show with him in L.A. a few weeks ago. But, yes, America, a lot of people go up to me. Hey, I love your show. Who's that black guy? He's awfully good. I don't think they mean anything by it, because I'm the guy from The Thing.
Yeah.
Hey, you're the guy from The Thing.
I get that, too. I actually, some people used to mistake me for you until I was forced to change to round glasses.
Yeah, you went Lennon-esque.
Yes, because we have the similar
hair. I went Tom Kenny-esque. Buddy Holly-esque.
But you've always been like that.
Yes.
I was originally Lennon-esque, and then I got bullied into rectangles, and I went with rectangles.
I don't remember you wearing rectangular glasses. And even if you did, we don't look at... The thing is, people who don't wear glasses think that everyone with glasses looks alike. They couldn't tell Peter Sellers from Michael Caine, you know what I mean? And then you never notice when you get new glasses, no one notices
ever.
For like 2 years.
They do that thing where they're like, did you gain weight?
Only other people who wear glasses go, those are nice.
Yeah,
people don't wear glasses 2 years later. What happened to your face?
Did you get an accident?
Yeah. I did. I had glasses put in front of them.
You're right, though. People who wear glasses are like, where'd you get those frames? Can I see them? What are those peoples? What did they get? Where'd you get those?
So peoples.
Oh, over peoples.
That's where these are from.
Are those?
Of course.
Cutting edge.
There you go.
I actually got these on sale at LA Eye Works. You know what I mean?
I don't know.
When I was younger, I said, I don't think I can pull off the Harold Lloyd thing. And now it's time. As I get older, give me a clock to hang from. Look at me. I'm funny. But what is this chat show that you got going, dude?
It's just a live chat show, cabaret chat show, like your show, but unlike regular talk shows that are on TV. I actually let the guests speak.
Oh,
and,
interesting.
Listen to them occasionally. And,
wow.
It's not about, it's never, the one thing I just, first of all, let me tell you where it is. It's at the Joe's Pub, which is at 425 Lafayette.
Here in New York.
If you're
listening
in New York,
to 1190 WLIB.
Yep. If you're in the Apple, it's at the Public Theater. There's a little cabaret upstairs called Joe's Pub.
Great room.
And my guests tonight are Lewis Black, who's a tremendous satirist, and Jeff Goldblum, who's currently in the Pillow Man, at the Booth Theater, which is another subversive lefty play.
Because if you see him, I don't like to do this, but we'd like to have him on our show. So maybe tell him what a fine time you had on the Mark and Mark show.
I'd be thrilled to. I don't know him. I've never met him. We've spoken a few times.
How do you get the booking, man?
Well, because friends of friends. It's show business. he speaks fantastically, exactly like he does in the pictures.
Uh-huh.
So when you talk to him, you go, Air America, not Air America? And he's on the radio. And you can't believe that you're... And I feel like I'm having dialogue in it. I'm in Jurassic Park or something.
Yeah.
Run, you know. There's a few stars, like if you've ever met Wayne Shatner, he speaks exactly that way all the time. He's not acting.
Yeah.
He would go, Mark, I want it to be. You know, like, and you go, it's exciting.
But he knows it's funny now.
Yeah, he does.
That's the weird thing is that I think because he saw so many impressions of him, or he realized he was a character, he's embraced his character.
Oh, fully.
Yeah.
And then Lipsinka is on piano. Lipsinka is a drag actor in New York. She's doing a show right now called Passion of the Crawford at the Zipper Theater, where she does a Joe Crawford thing. And Lipsinka is a marvelous lip syncer, but Lipsinka, unbeknownst to the public, is a concert pianist. And he's back in the
that.
Up tonight. Yeah, he used to play piano for the New York City Ballet.
Is he going
to
be backing you up in drag?
To be fervently wished. Yeah.
Because
otherwise he would just be a guy. but with the drag on, he's the fabulous Lipsinka, goddess of show business.
Now, do you do a monologue? Is it structured like a talk show?
I do. It is, actually. There's going to be a number, a monologue, guests.
A number? Wait, a dance number?
No, No, Lipstick is going to sing a number.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I got a musical talent in the house. Let people do what they do, baby.
I just didn't know if you were going to start swinging.
I am, as long as I'm swinging.
I was on stage at Gotham Comedy Club, and I did one of those things, you know, the moments that I have sometimes. Yeah. It's like, what the hell am I going to do now? How am I going to end this? Some woman stands up and goes, how about with a tribute to the Air Force?
Did you?
Yeah, coincidentally, I have the Rockettes
right
here.
Up and away,
I couldn't believe it. But she stood up and she was with a table. How about with a tribute?
Was she in uniform?
Well, there was a bunch of Air Force people, and it was somebody's birthday. But what a weird thing to phrase it like that. Yeah, it's like, guess what? Bob Hope is back. I got a Ouija board. Here we go. So we'll be back. Greg Proops, are you going to tell us about your Star Wars movie experience?
I'd be chuffed.
You were in it.
I was.
Okay. We'll talk about that and more funny with Greg Proops after this, Air America Radio.
Reboot it. What is this guy supposed to do?
Well, maybe reboot is just the term.
The Al Franken Show on Air America Radio.
Four past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Tradition program. Greg Proops is here. There he is. You know him from Whose Line Is It Anyway? Jimmy Kimmel Live. You did a bit on Just Shoot Me as well, huh? Wow, you work, man. Tonight he's at the
Just Shoot Me.
He's at Joe's Pub.
That was on Father Knows Best.
Yeah, that was
I'm
great.
In the car.
Now Robert,
oh, current.
I heard Robert Young crazy, out of control, behind the scenes, crazy, like doing the blow, the whole thing.
Oh, that guy with a coffee head.
Yeah.
Marcus Welby.
All right, here we go. I stopped the riff inside my own head. That's a rule against that, isn't it? It's not just don't say no during improv, but don't say no to yourself in your own head, isn't it?
I think when you're on the radio, you can say no occasionally with good effect.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah. Well, I think I did. I don't know if that had any effect whatsoever.
Self-editing oysters.
You have to. Joe's Pub tonight. That's at the Public Theater. Are there any seats to this? I mean, Lewis Black, Jeff Goldblum, those are big names, I'm assuming.
Probably is, but I don't know. I haven't checked at sales because it's 6 in the freaking morning when I got up, so it wasn't like I could call Joe's Pub and wake up to one disgruntled union guy in the middle of the night and go, hey, what did they buy over there?
It'd be awkward if you started leaving messages as talented. Hey, I know it's early, but it's Greg. I just want to know, is everything okay? Are you selling tickets or what? Okay, call me back.
Yeah.
5 minutes later, hey, it's Greg again.
Listen, I was just thinking, if we promoted it today on the radio, it should be all right. I mean, I'm hoping it will be. I got a guy off Broadway. I got a guy with a book out now. Lewis is on the middle of a massive tour.
He's always in the middle of a massive tour.
Yeah, he's such a good guy. He is. Funny.
We co-hosted Randy Rhoads' show together. He's been on our show, I think, two times. He's great in the morning on the phone. You ever heard that?
One second. I got some.
Unbelievable.
Coming from the tubercular ward of the Doc Holliday Hotel.
Kirk Douglas did that great, I swear to God.
Yeah, who, Doc Holliday?
Yeah, and the Burt Lancaster one.
Well, yeah.
I just saw the horrible Kevin Costner one that took forever to get through the poorly written writer.
Dennis Quaid's okay in that.
But not Val Kilmer. Val Kilmer was great.
I'm a huckleberry.
Yeah. I mean, what happened to
that
movie?
He's terrific in that movie.
I wish
and
that movie
Howard
was
is in that movie.
I wish that cast were in the Kevin Costner version with the detail and the money that went into that, but no. Yeah. And the writing.
Sam Elliott and everything.
It's great. It was great.
Yeah. Will and Virgil.
Will Paxton. Will Paxton's
Will
best.
Will Paxton.
So what? Now,
gosh, that's a good man.
It is. Bill Paxton.
Game over, man.
Yeah. So, okay, what were we talking about? Oh, Star Wars movie.
My Fabulous Talk Show. Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
The Fabulous Talk Show is...
I'm doing it next week in Los Angeles. I know you have nationwide... You're in L.A., right? I
mean, we were in L.A. in a good time swap, but then somehow or another we were hijacked for Stephanie Miller. It had nothing to do with ratings. Somebody at Clear Channel just made a decision and pushed us back into the middle of the night. I'm not bitter about it, but who the hell is Stephanie Miller and who cares? I'm not bitter about it, but what kind of executive on the Air America staff makes these decisions after we got a following? San Francisco, same damn thing, bro. I'm not bitter, but for Springer... What What is that about?
Yeah.
I can't tell you the hundreds of emails we had. And I got nothing against Springer, but hello, I'm trying to wake up.
Also, L.A. and San Francisco, that's prime time for you guys. But anyway, yeah. I'm doing one in L.A. next week, next Monday, the 23rd. And that's with Dave Eggers, and who wrote Heartbreaking Worker, Staggering Genius, and Colin Hay at Largo.
Well, that'll be good.
No one will be listening till the middle of the night, but hopefully they'll.
Stop it. We've got bakers and delivery people and tweakers that are going to be there.
Like, you're the honest, hardworking salt of the earth. Yes,
sure,
Star
sure.
Wars.
If I can take time away from drawing this maze, I'm going to go see Greg.
Hey, I got a question for you, Greg.
Yeah.
Mark.
I got jury duty tomorrow. Any tips?
Yeah, you already signed up for it? Because usually I just throw the thing away. Not that I don't want to take part in our democratic system. The one time I had to sit on jury duty, the first case that they brought up was two people that I knew.
No!
Fantastically.
Yeah.
When they came through at me, I went, I know these people, and I'm going to adjudicate in their favor should I be given the chance.
Yeah, yeah, because I definitely know they sell pot.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Yeah. Listen, Knapp and Kanai, they're good guys.
Good guys, yeah. Yep.
Just because they live in a basement in the Richmond district. I would be biased if you want to get off the jury. But a lot of times they don't pick you. They just sit you in a room
all day. Yeah, they just sit you in a room and you spend the whole day. You get an hour and a half for lunch.
You get an hour and a half for lunch. And
Back up. You're not going to be here tomorrow?
No.
Oh, I guess it's just me then.
What, do you have to go to some courthouse here in New York?
No, a courthouse in Jersey. Hackensack. Hey, believe me, you haven't lived until you've done this.
Tell me about the Star Wars character, because I didn't see the movie. I don't know what the hell's wrong with me, Greg. I don't do it. I don't keep up.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Did you see the movie you were in?
This new one?
No.
It hasn't come out yet,
No, I know, but what about the one you were in?
Oh, I'm most of it.
What character?
I left
you?
Before the end.
Yeah, what character?
Wow.
I left after I was in.
Yeah, of course.
I was one of the pod race announcers. I was in the first one, which is actually the fourth one.
Yeah.
It's all very confusing.
Yeah.
Phantom Menace is episode one, which is actually the first in the series, even though it's the fourth one that came out.
Uh-huh.
And I've lost everybody.
Yeah, I hope I have.
It's the first one that's got this cast.
Okay,
got
it. Current
cast.
Sure, sure.
Right? Natalie Portman and, or is it Natalie Imbruglia, whoever she is.
Yeah, you know.
And the one who, in the last movie, when the ship blows up in the opening scene of the movie, she's Princess Amandola, the princess of the universe.
Yeah.
And the ship blows up, and she goes, "We shouldn't have come." Like Joey Ross from Car 54. we shouldn't have come. We shouldn't have. Because, George is meticulous about acting and diction and characters and stuff like that.
What's he got going under his beard?
I'm not certain.
Okay.
He's a very nice person. And,
very diplomatic, right?
Me and Scott Capurro.
Okay.
Scott Capurro and I were the pod race announcers. So there's a scene, as you recall, in The Phantom Menace, where the Jedis are crash-landed on a planet, and because they can't apparently use their Jedi powers to get the ship fixed, they enter a race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I'm not sure that that's a Jedi code thing, or more of a guideline, like when your ships, don't force the... a mechanic who was obviously Jewish. I don't know if you saw the movie. Or Greek. I'm not sure, but you know how it is.
Yeah, Greek Jewish,
Jews,
Italian.
They're all from warm places where there's olives.
Yeah.
And, you know what I'm saying?
So I hear you, man.
I'm going to go, that little human being is out of his mind. I don't care what universe you're from. That's going to hurt and all that shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought my character's name was Fode for like 10 years since we made the movie. But apparently my character's Bede and Scott is Fode. And he speaks Huttese. So I go, that little human being's out of his mind. And Scott has to go, Adukido.
That's what Scott had to do?
Yeah.
Scott Capurro is a comic from San Francisco for people who don't know.
Guy.
And Huttese is Jabba the Huttese?
Yes, Jabba is from Hutt, and they speak Huttese. You
know? That's just complicated stuff, right?
Well, you asked. So I get letters from Denmark. I get letters from all over the world. People send me little tchotchkes and
personally,
gigas.
Personally, to you?
Because they want my autograph, or they want me to sign a baseball card and stuff like that.
A baseball card with you on it?
Well, it's not me. It's the CGI head that they gave the character. But I'm the voice of the character, so apparently it's me. And you understand that people who love Star Wars are completists.
Yeah.
It's not just a matter of, like, I really like the movie. I'm going to buy a doll. It's a matter of, I have to
Every
have the
doll.
Autograph.
Every
like,
character.
I guarantee you, I don't know the fellow's name who played Jar Jar Binks. I guarantee you he's, like, underneath an avalanche of mail.
Really?
Oh, yes.
That's unbelievable. You know, you've been to Giggles in Seattle?
I have.
You know Terry?
I do not know Terry.
Terry is a guy that books Giggles in Seattle.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Do you know that above the club, he has literally his apartment is a museum of Star Wars
really?
Memorabilia, but unopened Star Wars memorabilia.
It's worth more.
Right. But like four or five of the same one, you walk in, it's like a Star Wars store.
Well, I got six Boba Fett, and that's the second version of Boba Fett. Visor was.
But what if at what point do you go, dude, you got a problem?
Right, you're 60.
You've got some sort of weird obsessive compulsive disorder that's playing itself out in Star Wars memorabilia.
I found a place in Paris. I was in Paris with my wife as I rang you last week, and there's a Star Wars memorabilia store. And the guy spoke perfect English, of course.
Yeah.
And he didn't have my figure. Not that I was looking for it. But I happened to, I went, what the hell is, I didn't even know there was a Star Wars.
Did you know who you were, though?
No.
Oh, okay. That's, well, that's
until
good.
I did the voice. No, I'm kidding. I didn't. I didn't do the voice.
You did.
I didn't.
Come on, man.
I didn't. I should have, but I didn't. I'm not that big a geek. But the I appreciate that people like it and stuff like that. To me, it was never deep enough. I'm really glad to be part of it because it's all, you know, people love it and all that jazz. But I kind of like a... I like plot and philosophy and stuff. I like 2001.
Yeah.
That was a good sci-fi movie.
Oh, no, that was just on the other day.
Oh, that's
it was on, like, the Independent Film Channel.
What was?
Because it's 2001.
Oh.
It's oblique and impenetrable, and that's what I liked about it. Like, what happened?
Kind of like a racer hit.
Do you know the code? Do you know what it means? Have you, do you
2001?
Yeah.
Well, open the Pod Bay doors, Hal.
I'm not certain what it was. I believe that he transmogrified into another higher being, and then when he's a weird space fetus in the end in a tube, he's actually the master of the universe. But not the complete master, because clearly he's been made master by a higher power.
What about when he's old in the room with the fetus?
That's just the desiccation of the human form before he... becomes another higher species.
What about when he's in the... When
before
he's in
he becomes
the,
an iPod.
Exactly.
When he's in the weird light color tunnel, when it's like, kink, and you get the...
That was just bitching if you're hot. That's all that was. Hubert knew it. I knew it. It was just bitching. That's all that was. And then the eyes blinked and you went, no, it's fantastic.
Oh, man. To call for tickets to Greg's show tonight, 212-539-8770. That's
Thank
the,
you.
Joe's,
I don't even know the number.
Yeah, Joe's Pub reservation line. It's going to be a great show. Jeff Gold Blum, Lewis Black, Lipsinka, and the Inimitable. Is that the word?
Thank you.
Inimitable, yes.
Greg, it's hard to imitate me.
Yes. Greg Proofs. The number again for Joe's Pub reservation line, 212-539-8770. Greg, great seeing you. Good luck with the show. Come back anytime.
It's been a lot of fun,
Thanks,
man.
Mark.
It's been a lot of fun.
And we'll be back with a special phone call from a special activist. It's now 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests are comedy. Your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Evaluate for 30 days. Call now 1-800-900-2657. That's 1-800-900-2657.
Forty-nine past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
We're going to land this thing, as I like to say, despite any sort of criticism I may get from Sam Cedar.
Sam Cedar? Who?
Yeah, don't worry about it. We're not even.
What? I'm sorry to interrupt you, buddy. The yelling guy, the guy from Poodle, or the Balls, I forget. Anyway,
oh, yeah, that guy.
He's on line one.
Okay, all right, put him through. Hey, man, what's going on? So how's that thing you're working on going?
You mean the revolution?
Yeah, how's the revolution going? Did you guys come up with a better name yet?
I'll admit we have made some unfortunate mistakes in the naming of our group in the past. We are no longer known as NAMBLA, Poodle, Gals, or Balls. We are now called the Tactical Elite and Battle Action Group.
Okay, so you're going with Teabag.
Teabag, Mark. We will go out across the land, find the evil, slanderous conservatives where they live, and teabag them into submission. They will feel one thing above all others, a stern and ferocious teabagging.
All right. Well, I think this is something you're going to have to find out on your own, buddy. But make sure you send me one of those T-shirts before you burn them, okay? So last week, your group had a big, scary, revolutionary brunch. How'd that go?
the turnout at our rally...
Brunch.
...rally was disappointing, to say the least.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was me, my Shih Tzu stompers, who cannot be left alone, my girlfriend, who, while not actually there, as she had a shift at Crabtree and Evelyn, but assured me she would join the rally on conference call, and the Johnsons had to leave early, as their toddler Ben is an albino.
Hmm.
Naturally, the outdoor table irritated his corneas. But the Revolutionary Council took a vote.
You mean you and Stompers?
Yes, me and Stompers.
Oh, yeah.
And we decided that what Teabag needs more than anything is a recruiting drive.
Ah, recruiting drive. Since it's just you and Stompers, you decided, hey, maybe some people would help kick this revolution into high gear, huh?
Exactly.
All right, buddy. So where'd you start the recruiting drive?
My apartment complex, Chantilly by the Lake. Stompers and I took the elevator to the top floor and vowed to teabag our way to the very bottom.
So, how many floors is that, man?
Four.
Oh. And how many apartments would you say are in the complex?
As many as 16, I think.
So, how many recruits did your liberal action group make?
Well, I think the hour I chose may not have been the best. I found that at 11:30 a.m., most of my potential recruits were at work.
Oh, so you mean all of them were at work.
No, Mark, it might surprise you to learn I had a very successful recruiting day. Heed the names of my new lieutenants that shall haunt the dreams of the right wing. Rosa, the cleaning lady, and Ethan, a seventh grader who was homesick that day but would not open the door all the way. But even through that narrow slot, I managed to teabag him.
Well, you must be very proud of yourself, man. Mm. Well, while the police are on their way over to you, why don't you tell me a little bit about that badass revolutionary Rosa?
Rosa?
Yeah.
She spoke no English, but I could see in her the burning spirit of Che. So Stompers and I, and Rosa, and Ethan, as soon as he asks his parents, will begin our assault on the neocons. To war, Mark! To war!
Okay, so it's you and Rosa, a 12-year-old boy and a little dog. Buddy, that's not a revolution. That's the Wizard of Oz.
Oh, the story of Teabag will not be a story for children, I can assure you.
You can say that again. I can't take it anymore. I can't let you do this any longer. All right, listen, buddy. Are you in front of a computer right now?
Yes.
Okay. Type in the word teabag, all right, into the Google image search bar. All right, go ahead. I'll wait.
Okay. T-E-A-B-A-G. There. Let's... Oh, good sweet Lord! What have I done?
Oh, my God.
Oh, boy. So there you have it. That was a guy from the revolutionary group formerly known as Teabag.
Wow.
Oh, man. Riley, what's going on?
I don't know. You have some odd friends. I just want to
I'll tell you, I think this congestion in my chest has really added a new dimension to my laughter. It's wild. So what's going on? Tomorrow we've got a hell of a show. I'm going to
be here. I'm not going to be here.
Well, I'm trying to overamp it. It's going to be Ambassador Joe Wilson, who apparently his book is out again.
Nice tease.
No progress on who outed his wife, but yeah, the book is coming out again, so we'll talk to him unless he gets mad at me for saying this the way I'm saying it. And in that case, it'll just be me and Judy Gold.
Uh-oh.
Comedian Judy Gold is going to come and live music in the studio with a group called Antigone Rising.
Yeah.
It's many women.
Many women.
Many singing women.
Is your wife still in
town? And Judy Gold, a 6-foot-tall lesbian woman. It's going to be good, man. You don't know what you're missing, buddy.
Wait a minute. How many of these women are there?
I think there's like five.
Five.
There's five women in Antigone Rising. Is that right, Chris?
Uh-oh. Chris, so is that a 50-50 split between you and Judy?
I don't know. I don't know if Chris is going to really care because...
I used to love the fat guy.
But anyways, the...
shoes. All right, let's duel it out. We got a minute before we got to do it.
Listen, nigga, you go on.
I will not fear my meat.
Okay, and I will not fear my meat.
He must have quite a package.
He probably does, but at least...
I used to love the fat guy.
Jews. All right. So, all right, you know what? Wayne Gilman said,
what the hell is going on in here?
All right, so look, Judy Gold tomorrow, you're going to be at Jury Duty. It's Monday. That's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound, which we will be doing Mondays from here on out. One, disguise yourself as John Bolton and cut in front of the Star Wars Revenge of the Sith line yelling, I'm John Bolton, I'll do whatever I damn well please. Two, beg for sex. If your partner refuses, set up a lectern on the bed and filibuster. Three, protest the future closure of 33 military bases by nominating them for inclusion on the American Registry of Historic Fascist Buildings. Yes. Four, mark the 50th birthday of claymation icon Gumby by outing him. Ooh. And five, today's phrase, just drop this in the conversation. Hope you enjoyed Monster in Law this weekend. There was another little show that opened this weekend that you should check out called Civil War in Uzbekistan. It's hilarious. Wake up, sheeple. The Hollywood crap wagon is just parked in front of your brain.
Uh-oh.
What's the matter, Wayne?
They threw the mic at me.
Well, we're about to close up the show here. Riley's going to be on jury duty tomorrow.
Oh, so that's what he's doing.
I'm going to be here myself.
That's what I'm doing.
Jury duty.
By the way, Gilman, you know it's spring because Gilman took off the vest.
You're going to start busting on Gilman. You're going to be gone tomorrow. We're going to have him in and tell some Riley stories.
Wait a minute. No more of that. I'll call my lawyer.
All right, so that's it. Riley's out tomorrow. Judy Gold, Joe Wilson, and the music of Antigone Rising. Have a good time tomorrow. Sleep in, Riley.
Oh, thanks loads. Air America Radio.